Live from America's finest city, this is Real Talk San Diego on ESPN 1700.
Welcome. Happy Thursday. It's the Real Estate Radio Hour here with Ryan White. We have with us today Jacqueline Isaac. She is an estate planning attorney here in town, Carmel Valley, and what, downtown?
Downtown and in Glendale also, in Los Angeles.
Wow. So Southern California.
Yes.
Southern California. Her website is JacquelineIsaac.com. Now, you've been on, at least four or five times before.
Several times. I always enjoy being on your show, Ryan.
We've talked about myths and misconceptions about trust in the past. So we're going to touch on that again. We have five we've mentioned in the past. We'll be five, four, six. There'll be a variety of misconceptions we're going to touch on with Jacqueline, as well as Sarah Christ. She is with Live Home. And we're going to talk about home care and what you should be looking for in terms of home care, why one might invoke home care, and she's got some amazing statistics about how many people want to age in place. Sarah, that was well over 90%, right?
It's 90%.
Okay, good enough. I would venture to say that it's just about everybody we run into wants to stay at home, and so Sarah has a variety of ways to make that possible. So starting off with Jacqueline, let's talk about myths and misconceptions about trust. Now, you've broken this down into five in the past, but I would imagine there's many more.
There are so many misconceptions, and it's very important that a family really understands what it's all about. For example, you hear it in the movies. You watch it in the movies. You hear it on the radio. People always speak about wills. Wills are always the theme when we're talking about advanced planning. But what people do not know is that in the state of California, a will is just not enough if you have assets over $150,000. Meaning if you have a home in California, for example, Ryan, most likely it's going to be over $150,000. A will would not be enough to transfer the property to your children in that case.
Well, let's go back a second. Why is a will not enough?
A will is not enough because in the state of California, the rules say that you need a living trust in order to protect your home and ensure it doesn't go through the courts.
Got it.
A will would suffice as a pour over, as an extra document, if you will, to give notice to the state of California that a trust was created and to stay out of probate. But that's all it does in that scenario. So if you have assets over $150,000, meaning likely a home in California, you need to consider having a living trust in order to pass down that asset to your children without the courts getting involved.
I think I remember talking about this before, so correct me if I'm wrong here. I actually think that someone had mentioned to me it wasn't necessarily the equity in the home that mattered. It was the overall value of the home. So if you own a home for $150,000 and owe $150,000 on it, you would still go through probate.
Absolutely. And I get that all the time when clients come in for the consultations. They'll say, well, the loan, I mean, pretty much there's not any equity in the house, so I should be good. I said, it's not about the equity. It's about the fair market value at the time of death. There's going to be an appraisal. And if it's over that $150,000 mark, fair market value wise, it will go through court. Even if you have a will, even if the will looks perfect, even if you've laid out exactly who you want to take the asset, it doesn't matter. In fact, we had a case a while back where a son had this perfect will that his mom created, and he had this home. And he took the will over to the recorder's office, and he said, well, I need to transfer the house now into my name. Here's the will. Everything's written out perfectly. Please get this done. The recorder's office started laughing. The people at the recorder's office couldn't believe what he was saying. She said, sir, can't you see that this is a will and not a trust? You want this deed transferred? Go to court. It took about a year and a half to get that house released. And you can imagine the thousands and fees and the time and the fact that everything is public information. Everything in regards to that family's affairs, their debts, their loans, everything was out for the public to know. And that really hurts, especially when you're already going through that grieving process. It's a very private matter between you and your family. You don't want the world to know what's going on with your family. So in order to make sure that it's easy, that it's private and much more efficient, consider having a living trust. A will is not going to be enough for you.
So it is avoiding of the probate that one would want to do. And you just described a little bit why: the expense, the duration, right? The publicness of it, right?
Correct, correct.
And go ahead, I'm sorry.
But there are many other reasons that we create a living trust. This is just one reason. This is the necessary, this is the foundation of why we have to do it. But there are many benefits, right? Many benefits. And we'll talk about that in a little bit.
Got it. So you mentioned this one particular case. It took this gentleman a year or more.
A year and a half.
Overcome and work through the probate process.
And you can imagine right now with the budget cuts in California, it's just getting harder and harder. For example, there was a probate court in Pasadena. They had to close it down. So everyone's consolidating to the Los Angeles probate court. So what's happening with our crisis in California, there's just a lot of minimizing of these court hearings and when they can take place. So it's taking much, much longer to get those assets outside of the courts and into the hands of the family.
So why doesn't everybody have a trust? I mean, why does probate even exist? How come we haven't overcome this yet?
Because they just don't know. There is not enough awareness out there. Again, unfortunately, Hollywood portrays it wrong. And a lot of times Hollywood and the media does influence how we think. And you always see that story with the old man that just, as they say, kick the bucket, right? And there's a lawyer standing there and he reads the will. Have you ever seen a movie with them reading a trust? They're always reading the will. And it's because of that, you know, misinterpretation of what it's about that people just don't do it right. And that's why we're here, Ryan. We want to bring that awareness to the community.
You're right. Now that I think about that, they are always reading a will. Interesting. We're talking with Jacqueline Isaac. Her website is jacquelineisaac.com, JacquelineIsaac.com, JacquelineIsaac.com. Talking about major myths and misconceptions about a trust. And, well, in this case, we also brought will into the mix. And frankly, the misconception was that will was enough, mm-hmm. right? And it mm-hmm. simply isn't. Now, you talk about here protecting your assets from, well, we talked about probate court and the living trust, and we talked a little bit about why people want to avoid probate. What other reasons do I need a trust?
As I mentioned before, there are many benefits by creating a living trust. One of them, for example, is the fact that you can have mechanisms put in place in the trust. Again, trust should not be cookie cutter. Every trust applies differently depending on the family circumstances. And at many times, you can create a trust to protect your children in the case that they're going through bankruptcy, creditor judgment, or divorce at the time of your death. Let me explain. We had a case a few years back, and this man created this trust. It was a very basic trust, the cookie cutter trust that we were just talking about. And he said that every child would take their portion in equal shares outright and free of trust. That's the generic language, outright and free of trust, meaning full stop. I die, children take their inheritance, and that's
full
it.
Okay.
We don't look at anything else. That's all we look at. If I'm gone, they take their share.
Okay.
What happened was one of the sons was going through a pending bankruptcy litigation. Unfortunately, all of a sudden, the son had to automatically receive his inheritance by the terms of the trust. So during the litigation, they caught on that all of a sudden he had this new asset and it was completely wiped out in the bankruptcy judgment. What a loss. This father worked so hard to make sure his children get their inheritances.
Right.
And at the end, because of the fact that he went for that cookie cutter trust without the correct analysis about his children's situation, his son lost it all.
So what kind of language can I use to prevent that?
We have in our office a special protection. We call it the Protective Inheritance Trust Provisions. And what we say is that if a child is going through pending litigation at the time of the trustor's death, at that time they will not receive their inheritance. In fact, it will be put on hold until the litigation has been finalized, meaning you can most likely get a settlement in, finalize the judgment, and then after be able to take that inheritance. And you're saving your parents' inheritance that they worked very hard to give you. So that's something that we want to consider when we do an estate plan. Can I put those protections for my children? What is going on with my children? Are they the type that may not be so good with dealing with financial affairs? Are they having an issue with their husband or wife? Are they going through a divorce? All these issues really matter, because when you sit before us in our office and we go through these scenarios, every scenario can have a remedy to deal with to ensure that the children really are protected. In many cases, a child, for example, doesn't know how to spend their money well. And maybe they're young. Yeah, they're an adult. But think of yourself when you were 20, 21. You want to protect them. So you can put these limitations and conditions and make sure they get certain distributions, not the whole thing, at times in their life. So you can put those protections. Again, it's not boilerplate. You don't want it to ever be boilerplate, because you don't know what's going on and you don't know the protections that can be provided. So I really recommend that everyone that decides to do a living trust sit down in a law office, talk about your circumstances and see what can be done. And that's what we do in our office.
We're talking with Jacqueline Isaac. She is an estate planning attorney. Her website is jacquelineisaac.com. It's spelled J-A-C-Q-U-E-L-I-N-E-I-S-A-A-C, jacquelineisaac.com, talking about myths and misconceptions about trusts. Let's go back one more time and talk about the specialized trust that you mentioned. So in the situation you mentioned where the full stop happened siblings got the full payout, the creditors in that situation received the money.
Exactly.
You know, and so simply if provisions are put in the trust that the payout is not to occur, in that case, he would have been able to, well, hopefully, settle his debt.
Correct.
And after that was settled, then receive the income.
Exactly.
That's
exactly
pretty amazing.
Right. And you know, what if you're going through a divorce at the time? So let's look at another child. Let's say the daughter in the scenario, for example, was going through some problems with her husband. How could we protect that daughter to ensure that the inheritance remained as hers and hers alone? You could put a condition inside the trust that says, prior to receiving the inheritance, there must be a sole and separate property trust created by the daughter. Put that money in that sole and separate property trust. Keep that separate character of the asset and ensure that even later on, if that daughter got a divorce, the husband cannot come after one penny. It all remains as her separate inheritance that came from her father and the husband. When he divorces her, if she divorces him, it doesn't matter, of course, in California, but won't be able to access one penny of that inheritance.
We're talking with Jacqueline Isaac, estate planning attorney. One more time, her website is jacquelineisaac.com. When we come back, I'm going to have you talk about that again, because that was a complicated example that I think is important. We want to get that example out there one more time. And we're also going to hear from Sarah Christ about exactly how to age in place ahead of us when we come back. Welcome back. You're listening to the Real Estate Radio Hour here on Real Talk San Diego. This is your host, Ryan White. We've been talking with Jacqueline Isaac. She is an estate planning attorney. Her website is jacquelineisaac.com. We're talking about myths and misconceptions about trust, and we're going to come back to that. Right now, we're going to shift gears here over to Sarah Christ. Sarah is with Live Home, and Live Homes, they provide in-home care to allow seniors or anybody to age in place. And as I mentioned previously, I know she said 90. In the past, I've heard words like 96, 97. I think it's pretty much anybody. I mean, I know you have to quote the right numbers, but I'm going to say just about everybody wants to stay at home. Not a whole lot of people want to have to be moved to a facility when they're too old to, well, take care of themselves. And you provide a solution for that, right?
We do, Ryan. Thank you for having me today. So 90%, according to AARP, of seniors want to age in place. That means that they want to be in their home until the time of death. And the reason why that's important is because that's where they've been for years and years. That's where their pictures are, all their belongings, the familiarity. And not to mention, usually that's where they're surrounded by their friends in their community. And so they prefer that. And if you were to force them to move to a community when they don't want to, what we do know is that typically, you know, depression can set in. They need to be on board with the decision if they are to move. And if they don't want to, let's get a solution that allows them to stay at home.
Okay, well, I think we can all wrap our minds around wanting to age in place or staying at home. I think that's a relatively simple concept, but it comes down to, how does that happen? How is it possible? And that's really where your solution comes in. What exactly does in-home care mean?
So what in-home care is, now LiveHome, we are a national geriatric care management company. So we have care managers on staff, social workers, RNs, and then we have our caregivers. So what home care is, we're non-medical. We can do everything from companionship all the way up until where they need assistance with bathing and toileting and where we're working alongside hospice. And so home care includes the companionship, transportation, meal preparation, light housekeeping, communication with the family members, and really what I'm the biggest fan of is the psychosocial aspect of it. So it's not enough.
Psychosocial.
Yeah, psychosocial. So a lot of people, when they think about home care, they think about, okay, we need to make sure that mom and dad are safe in their home, which means we just need to put somebody in the home to be there with them and make sure they're safe and help out around the home. Well, yes, we need to make sure
they're safe. At a most basic level, right? Yeah, of course.
Yes. But we really need to take into consideration, who are these individuals? What's important to them? What did they used to do that they're no longer capable of doing? And how is it that through LiveHome, through our caregivers, we can facilitate these activities? Mm. And that lends to purpose. Number one, they can still do the things that they want to do. And it increases their psychosocial well-being. It's all about engagement in society and feeling as though you have a continued purpose in life. So that way you don't sink into isolation and depression.
Well, what are some examples of things that these seniors might want to do that they're no longer able to do that LiveHome can assist them with?
Okay. Well, let's say that there's Mrs. Jones, right? And she really loved to go play bridge. But now all of a sudden, Mrs. Jones can no longer drive. She has lost her license.
Got it.
Well, here's a perfect example where LiveHome can come in, and we can provide a caregiver, but also, and here's some suggestions for adult children when you're trying to approach your parents with the topic of home care, or for professional advisors that are trying to talk to their clients about, I'm concerned, or I think you may be a little happier if we get you some assistance. Don't call it a caregiver. If what the need is, you need some transportation so that way you can go to play bridge, which is what you want to do and will make you happy, how about we get you a driver, Mrs. Jones?
Sure.
How does that sound to you?
Everybody wants a driver.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I want a driver.
I want one too.
Yeah.
Or if what Mrs. Jones is needing is some assistance around the home, number one, the caregiver can be there and make sure that she's safe. But if the caregiver is going to be helping out with meal preparation and light housekeeping and the social engagement aspect of it, Mrs. Jones, wouldn't it be nice to have a personal assistant? You know, here's the thing. We need to make sure that these people get the care that they need, but we also need to be very cognizant with the way that we are presenting it. We need to present it in a very palatable way so that way they're open to getting it, because ultimately it is what they need and it is what is going to keep them safe. It's our responsibility to present it in a way that makes it easy for them to accept.
Mm. We're talking with Sarah Chris. She's with LiveHome. Their website is LiveHome.com, LiveHome.com. And I can see a lot of bridging the gap between mom or dad wanting to maintain their independence or at least not looking as vulnerable as needing in-home care, and the children suggesting that clearly there's a need, right? And you just identified two wonderful ways, a driver and a personal assistant. I'll take both of those. Yeah. I'll take three of both of those right now. And that's a brilliant method. I would imagine 9 times out of 10, the client who is resisting of care, once presented in that fashion, is on board, right?
Not necessarily. I mean, it's often a process. I mean, what we need to understand is that there's a lot of dignity and there's a lot of pride, mm-hmm. and nobody wants to admit that I need help. I can't take care of the things that I once could. So that's where I'm a big fan of the team approach. And this is really where having a home care company that has the care management platform, where we have the social workers that can help facilitate these conversations. So we want to bring the team together, the adult children, the financial advisor, the estate planning attorney, what have you, and the parents if possible, and just have a conversation around, okay, here's what we can offer and here's what a solution is and here's what's going to happen if we don't use this solution. So we're a big fan of laying out what all of the options are and hand-holding and guiding people through the process of making whatever decision is best for them.
We're talking with Sarah Crist. She is with Live Home. Their website is LIVHOME. And that's a really hard job to do, to be able to paint a picture of what potentially could happen if help isn't there. That's not an easy thing to do. I mean, it's really easy to say, that won't happen. And then once it does, it's too late. Well, could be too late, let's say. I mean, running up, I would imagine you run across that a lot.
We do run across it a lot, and it's very much, you know, a lot of people will say, oh, well, I will get my documents in order tomorrow. I will do my estate plan, my living trust, I'll do it tomorrow. Next thing you know, 10 years go by, and then 20 years go by.
Happens all the time.
It does, and the thing is, it goes by with your care plan. We really want people to think about creating a plan of care when they're thinking about getting all of their other affairs in order, because it can be proactive planning can prevent catastrophic things from happening. If you have a plan in place, you know, and let's say mom or dad has made their wishes known, I really don't want to go to a facility. I want to stay in my home. Okay, mom or dad, or the attorney that's talking to the client. Okay, well, if you don't want to go to a facility, what do you want? Okay, and then you can start having this conversation around this, you know, the stereotypical morbid conversation, but it needs to be had, because you can't expect for someone to carry out your wishes if you haven't made them known. And the sad fact is that if you don't make your wishes known, and once you lose capacity, you can no longer make the decision for yourself. So everybody else is making it for you, and you don't want that to happen.
So putting a plan in place as far as how you want your aging in place to be, or not occur, but usually occur, is something that can prevent, well, sibling rivalries and essentially assure as much as possible that you're going to get what you want.
You're going to get what you want. And in an ideal world, I would love for this to be a part of the planning process in general. When you're talking about all of your other affairs, you know, your living trust and all of this, I would really wish for people to start talking about what they want in their end days as far as their level of care. Where do they want to be? Who do they want to be making the decisions? And one, I think that it would allow for the adult children to feel confident in making that executive decision when the time comes that mom or dad needs care, as opposed to what we see a lot of is they know that they need to make the decision and they know that the need is there, but there's that role reversal issue and there's that guilt and there's that denial. But if they have all these conversations proactively, it removes a lot of that.
Got it. We're talking with Sarah Crist. She is with Live Home. Their website is LIVHOME.com. So you touched on this briefly, and I just want to go back to it. The spectrum of care that Live Home provides. You mentioned simple companionship, and that's kind of like just a friend to be there on occasion. Is that what that means?
Yes, a friend. I really like the idea of, wouldn't it be nice to have a friend? Doesn't that sound much nicer than you need a caregiver?
Sure, of course. Of course.
Yes.
And then to the other end of the spectrum, what would that be?
To the point where the person has very, very much declined and they need assistance bathing or toileting, or like I said, we we do what we do, and we do what we do very well, and that is home care and care management. And so we don't try to dabble in home health, and we don't do hospice. We prefer to partner with those types of organizations. And so what can we do? All the way to companionship up to where the person is on hospice, and we are working as a partner with the hospice company for the care of the person.
Got it. So what you're describing is a situation where you're playing possibly one role. If there ends up needing to be health care in the home, that's part of your team, as well as hospice can be brought in as part of your team. That's not specifically what Live Home does, but that's the team concept you're talking about, right?
Yes, we work with the team concept. It's very much a philosophy of we want to do whatever is best for the client. And so if we've had the client for years and it's time for hospice, we're going to choose a hospice company that has that same client-centered approach that we do, that is in line with us philosophically.
Makes sense. One more time. This is Sarah Christ. She is with Live Home. Their website is LIVHOME. That's the website, LIVHOME. When we come back, I'm going to have Jacqueline Isaac walk us through one more time her sole and separate property aspect of the Protective Inheritance Trust. Ahead of us, when we come back. Here on Real Talk San Diego. We've been talking with Sarah Christ with Live Home. One more time, their website, LIVHOME.com. LIVHOME. We're going to shift gears here back to Jacqueline Isaac. She is an estate planning attorney. And earlier on the show, she was talking about a protective inheritance trust. And we talked about some ways that may have some protection against creditors when going through that process. But also you mentioned an example of a divorce that I think is really important to highlight the value of the protective inheritance trust. I'd like you to go through that example one more time.
Sure. So protective inheritance trust provisions, you can consider them as an umbrella. Under that umbrella, there are many layers of different protections that we can provide. So for example, we talked about the one with the creditors. If there is a child that's going through any type of litigation, we can put those protections in there to ensure that their inheritance is protected. But there's another scenario that we need to consider. What if your child is going through a divorce? Or what if that child is having some issues with their spouse at the time of your death? Don't you want to ensure that that inheritance goes to the child and not the ex? We can do that at the estate planning firm. What we do is we create, under the Protective Inheritance Trust provisions, a condition. It says that the child must create a sole and separate property trust before taking their inheritance. So that child, at the time they go to the office, they create a trust. We can call it sole and separate property trust. Then they take the inheritance and put it inside that vehicle. That ensures that if later on there is a divorce, that inheritance remains as separate property and not community. The spouse cannot come after it. Now, in another alternative, the bad alternative, a lot of people, we're busy people. People are running around, and a lot of times we're switching bank accounts or commingling things, and that can have a lot of ramifications. So a lot of times, and we've had this scenario before, where we had a person that passed away and his daughter didn't know what to do with the money, took the money, put it in a joint account between her and her husband. She converted it to community property, even though it was originally separate property. By that conversion, 5 years later, she wasn't even thinking about a divorce at that time. 5 years later, he filed for divorce, and he was able to access 50% of the inheritance that her father worked hard for. We don't want that to happen to you. We want to make sure that your children are really protected. So we'll put that condition in, say that it's separate, make the child go through the procedure of creating it, even though it's a little burdensome in the beginning. At the end, it's worthwhile.
Sounds like a great provision, and one that I've never heard of before. I think that's a really good reason to reach out to Jacqueline Isaac, estate planning attorney. Her website is JacquelineIsaac.com. I'm going to spell it for you. J-A-C-Q-U-E-L-I-N-E-I-S-A-C. AAC, JacquelineIsaac.com. Now, you wanted to talk about your humanitarian organization there, Roads of Success.
Yes. We have a humanitarian organization that's been around now for many years, and our focus is to really help advance the rights of minorities and deal with crises that are going on all over the world. And we just came back from Iraq, Ryan. It was incredible. An incredible trip. You know, it's one thing to hear about it on the news, but it's another thing to be able to actually say, we can be a light in the midst of the darkness. We had that opportunity this month. This is our second trip now to Iraq. And I know everyone was hearing about it on the news when the Yazidi people went to the top of the Sinjar Mountain to escape from ISIS. President Obama talked about it in one of his State of the Union speeches. We went to the top of Sinjar Mountain, and we had the community of San Diego and Los Angeles collect blankets, toys, clothes, supplies for these people. And we took it up to the mountain, we distributed ourselves, and we saw that there is hope, that everyone can make a difference in this part of the world if we put our hands together. This is not a crisis across the world. This is a crisis that's affecting every single one of us. ISIS didn't affect Iraq alone. It's been affecting France. It's been affecting Libya, Egypt. And it's affecting us here at home. And we all have to put a stop to it. And we need the people of Iraq to know that they are not alone. They are not alone. We are here and we're standing with you. It was an amazing trip. We were able to meet the girls that were kidnapped and raped in the hands of ISIS, and they were rescued, and we were able to interact with them, and we're getting them help as we speak. It's just so amazing to know that even in the midst of tragedy, even in the midst of what you hear in the media, there's still a light, and these people are going to make it. I believe in these people. When you see what they've gone through, the suffering, going up that mountain 9 days without food or water, having their families kidnapped, torn apart, but being able to smile in our faces and saying that there is hope. What an example.
And so is it the goal of your organization to provide, of course, physical aid in blankets, but also spiritual, emotional help to these people? What is the goal of the organization?
It's three. We have three goals: physical, psychological and spiritual, and legal. Physically, we bring in the materials that are needed in the midst of crisis so that there can be survival. Psychological and spiritual, we want them to continue on. So we bring trauma experts and psychologists, and that's what we did in our last trip, to help with the healing process. Not just with the victims, but the workers that are helping the victims constantly, what we call compassion trauma. Third, we deal with building and changing the legal foundation. We work with legislators and we work with the government to ensure that there are mechanisms in place to protect the internally displaced people that are running into this new area in Iraq, to ensure that as Christians or as Yazidis, they have rights. They can express their freedom of religion. They can express through their worship. They have those rights in their new home. And so that's something we've been working on in addition to women's rights issues.
So the website here is roadsofsuccess.org. Do I have that right?
Correct.
Roadsofsuccess.org for people who are interested in getting involved.
Yes.
One more time, the website is roadsofsuccess.org. And you said this is your second trip, right?
Technically, it's our third trip.
Third trip.
This is our third trip to Iraq now.
And how long has your organization been around?
We've been around since 2007.
2007. And you are the vice president,
right? Yes, I am. Yes,
okay.
I am.
Okay. One more time, we're talking with Jacqueline Isaac, talking about Roads of Success. The website is roadsofsuccess.org. One more time, roadsofsuccess.org. When we come back, we're going to hear more from Sarah Christ, a little bit about Live Home, and also about her nonprofit, Physicians Advocates for Veterans. Ahead of us, when we come back. Welcome back. We've been talking with Jacqueline Isaac, estate planning attorney. Her website is jacquelineisaac.com, as well as more information on Roads of Success. The website there is roadsofsuccess.org. Going to shift here back to Sarah Chris. She is with Live Home. They provide in-home care, and her website, livhome.com. Now, one of the things you mentioned during the break here was how veterans have different end-of-life issues than, I guess, we civilians, right? What does that mean? And you kind of mentioned that how Live Home is specifically planning for that.
Yes. So let me preface that by saying I am a military veteran myself. And there's two main categories of people that I care strongly about, and that is the elderly and veterans. And so being a veteran myself, I started doing some research and spoke with my company. And what we know is that military veterans tend to have different end-of-life issues than non-veterans, meaning, you know, they probably have some post-traumatic stress syndrome from their experiences, but they've been able to cope with them and suppress them throughout the course of their lives. But in the case where there's cognitive decline, dementia, Alzheimer's, what have you, they start losing the capability of suppressing that. And so that's where you start to see some complications, behavior issues, right? And it's also important to recognize that, you know, that they've done things and they've seen things. And as they age, you start thinking about certain things in life and trying to make sense and trying to accept things and make amends and, you know, really deal with some deep rooted stuff that you have. And so those things come up. And so we recognize as a company that it's important to have caregivers and care managers that understand these issues, because we have to tailor the way that we interact with this population by having an understanding of these unique issues.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. And so that it kind of sounds like one of the reasons you got involved with Live Home, but also you've talked about the Physician Advocates for Veterans, which seems like it's very much in line with the aging in place and how a veteran might have different end-of-life issues.
Yes. So I'm at a great place in life. I get to work with the elderly through Live Home, and now, you know, our focus on veterans in addition to elderly people in general. But then also I'm heavily involved with a nonprofit called Physician Advocates for Veterans. And Physician Advocates for Veterans came about because there was a group of retired doctors in San Diego that decided they wanted to help veterans. And so they banded together, created this nonprofit. And what they do is they provide education to veterans of any age, whether it be post 9/11, even the World War II veterans that are left Korea, Vietnam, it doesn't matter. But what they do is they help veterans understand their healthcare needs. They help them understand what their diagnosis is. And then they also prepare them to ask the appropriate questions for when they meet with their doctors to have a more efficient appointment. Because what we know is that the healthcare system, whether it be the VA or the civilian system, is a little bit overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. And so if we can better prepare patients to go in to speak with their doctors, then we're helping not only the patient or client, we're also helping the healthcare system. And so what we're doing with Physician Advocates for Veterans is we're developing these partnerships with other veteran nonprofits who can recognize that perhaps the veterans in their program don't understand what's going on with their healthcare, or they're just frustrated with their healthcare. And then what happens is we assign them a physician. They get to talk to the physician for free, express their frustration, their confusion. The physician, and many of these physicians are used to doing this. They've always been there for their family and their friends, asking them questions about health stuff, right? Well, so now these physicians are just doing this for the veteran population here in San Diego.
Wow. I see. So, and so the website here is paveforvets.org. Do I have that right?
Yes.
P-A-V-E. For the number four, vets, V-E-T-S .org, paveforvets.org. Go there to find out more information. I would imagine there's places they meet and they can go through. So if I was to go to one of the meetings and go through your program here, I might show up with my doctor with a checklist of items that I would want to make sure I ask at my appointment.
Absolutely. And I can give you an example. We have a veteran right now, and I will not share his name, but his arm was blown off in Afghanistan. Yeah. And he had 26 surgeries, and he was being told he was still experiencing pain. And they were saying, you know, you're just going to have another surgery to fix this. Well, I had assigned him a physician, and the physician said, no, wait a minute. Let's take a step back and explore what the other options are. So now this veteran is not going to have his 27th surgery. There's alternative methods, which we've explained to him. And more than anything, the veteran has told me he could not believe the fact that a doctor would take the time free of charge and just care about him. Mm-hmm. And so there's the informing him of what's going on in his options, but also just making him feel good and feeling as though somebody really cares about him. And that can greatly help them in their transition back into society.
We're talking with Sarah, Chris. We're talking about Physician Advocates for Veterans. Their website is paveforvets.org, P-A-V-E, the number 4, vets.org. Now, I can certainly see how navigating the medical system with the limited amount of time that your assigned doctor has to spend with you can be, well, overwhelming. And making sure you get all the questions asked or answered or getting the understanding that they're really there to assist as opposed to just crank you through and get their numbers in. Really seems like you've come up with something to fill the void. You know, the advocate is seems like a really good word to fill with this physician taking time off from doing what they do to assist the vets in managing that, well, I guess it's the appointment, but the structure and the timeline and what questions need to be asked through that appointment. Sounds like a wonderful service. One more time, it's Physician Advocates for Veterans, the website, P-A-V-E, the number 4, vets.org. We've been talking with Sarah Chris. She works for Live Home. Their website is L-I-V-H-O-M-E. One more time, L-I-V-H-O-M-E. We've also heard from Jacqueline Isaac. She is an estate planning attorney. We talked about myths and misconceptions about trusts. Her website is jacquelineisaac.com, 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 as well as her humanitarian mission, which she is vice president of, Roads of Success, roadsofsuccess.org. Ladies, thank you both for joining us. Until next week, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.